Okay. So Pandu, let's see. So they grew up, Bhishma trained them. Dhritarashtra, Pandu, Vidura. Vidura quickly, because he had that benediction, he quickly grew his intelligence, and he, even elder people would come to him for advice. I mean, he's an Amsha of Dharma. I mean, you know, right and wrong and everything in between. Then Pandu, because he's the one who could see and he could fight, Bhishma trained him to be a Kshatriya. And Bhishma was like trained by Parashuram. So, of course, you know, Pandu was an expert warrior. So he went around and he, because what happened was when Pandu was growing, they kind of started losing their territory. Because the kingship was in question. And basically the way that it worked is, you know, you had the Kuru dynasty was in charge pretty much because they were the strong men. And so when Bhishma was there, but there was no king, you know? And so people kind of started taking some of the land and saying no, and being independent too. Like, you know, the way it works is, and if you read the book, basically the king, when Yudhisthira was king, for example, they'd send out Arjuna, and he would go everywhere, and he'd say, I represent the, you know, Yudhisthira and the Kuru line, you know, give us tribute. And then they'd have to give him tribute or they'd fight. And so people weren't giving their tribute anymore. And so that's the whole concept of the Kshatriyas. They take for a living and give as their dharma. They take for a living and then they give. The Vaishyas accumulate wealth and then they give to the Kshatriyas. That's the whole concept. The Kshatriyas give them land and then they accumulate wealth. The Kshatriyas employ them and then they accumulate wealth and then they give in tax to the Kshatriya. And so he can, because he maintains all the infrastructure of that makes life happen. And so that's his job. And so there's everyone has a clearly defined role. And everyone's doing what they need to do. And so the Kshatriya, they also take tribute, you know, from other kings. That's how you acquire more wealth. And so, you know, you maybe marry into another family and then they'll give you tribute or. So it's a whole thing. It's all outlined in Mahabharata, how in this Bhishma outlines when he's talking to Yudhisthira. He talked to him for a long time while he was on the bed of arrows. So he outlines a whole social governmental system, how it all works. And so it's all there. If you take the time to read, it's in the Raja Dharma section of the Shanti Parva. It's the whole thing, how it all works. So this thing wasn't happening. The money wasn't coming in. And they were losing kings that were, you know, aligned to them. So Pandu went out. And he did the standard issue, which is you go and you say, I'm from the Kurus, and you hand me tribute, you know. So they, you know, either they handed to him or he would fight him. And so that's what happened. And that's the Kshatriya way. And so he went out, and when he went around, he went all over the countryside to different kings, because kings would have little territories, you know, sub-states, or they weren't like huge tracts of land. It was, everyone had their own place, you know, but everyone was kind of knitted together by this concept. It's kind of like feudalism, a little different. And so so he went out and got all the, when he came back, he had for several miles, he had cartloads of tribute. And so they all brought it back, you know. And so everyone was happy, you know. Bhishma wanted to get Pandu married. He wanted to get all of them married, really, you know. And so they, the first, I guess I'll do an order of the age. Bhishma went to Afghanistan, which at that time was called Gandhar. And so he talked, that was kind of like in the sticks, you know, so to speak at the time. I mean, it still is. It's kind of like, you know, backwater Afghanistan. But he went there and went to the king of Gondar. And so the daughter was Kandari. And he said, you know, please, you know, we want to form an alliance. Because the thing is that, so he wanted to form an alliance with them. So they were like, great, you know, these are the kings, you know, the great kings. So they married Gondari off. And so when she found out that her husband was blind, she tied a scarf around her eyes to make her also blind so that she wouldn't be higher than him. And so Prabhupada explains in several purports that just like how yogis, they get power by brahmacharya and tapasya, women get power by chastity. And because she did that, she actually acquired like mystic powers. So women, they can acquire mystic powers through chastity. That's what Prabhupada explains. And it's also explained in Mahabharata. That's how Gandhari, she had these powers, and she actually literally, you know, treated Duryodhan like hard as iron, so he wouldn't be killed. There's a whole story in that. So Gandhari was married. So then there was Pandu married two wives. One, so the first one was Bhishma went to Madra, which is not Sindh, but Sindh is Pakistan. Madra would be in a region of like where Punjab is now, in the Punjab. There's an area. Punjab was cut in half, and some is in Pakistan, and some is in India. And so Madra is like the Punjab. And so he went there. And the king of Madra was Shalya. And his sister was Madri. He was a young king. He wasn't like old king. He was like a contemporary of Bhishma. Maybe even a little younger than Bhishma. And so he had a younger sister, and that was Madri. And she was so they married her off to Pandu. And this is one of the only places I find in Vedic literature where there's an arranged marriage like this for Kshatriyas. Just to like give you a cultural understanding, you know, these days people are very big into like arranged marriages and things. If you read these Shastras, you really don't find it in too many places. Even like, yeah, I mean, just think about like all Krishna is always saving some princess, or all these Kshatriyas, they always have some kind of Swayamvara or some kind of thing like that. It's very common. And so even other people, you mostly find these kind Gandharva Vivaha or Rakshasa Vivaha is a very common theme in most of these stories. But in this case, it was called Brahma Vivaha, where you get it's arranged marriage. Pandu came. I mean, so Madri married Pandu. That was an arranged marriage. And then they heard about the Bhojas were having a Vivaha. I mean, a Swayambar. Now, see, what happened is Kunti is the sister of Vasudeva. And Kunti Bhoja is related to the Vrishnis, the King Ugrasena and all those people. He's related. And the thing is that he couldn't have any children. But they did an astrology type reading. And they said if he adopts a girl, then he'll have children of his own. So Ugrasena, Vasudev's father ended up marrying out ended up having Pritha, which was Vasudev's sister. He adopted her out to Kunti Bhoja. So then they called her Kunti, because her name's Pritha, but then she was adopted by Kunti Bhoja, so then they called her Kunti. And usually you call her Queen Kunti, but the king's name was Kunti Bhoja. And so they're actually descended from Kartavir Arjuna in the great, you know, annals of, you know, bloodlines and everything. Kartavir Arjuna is a king that fought with Parshuram, but they're actually descended from him. But Kunti Bhoja, so Pritha, and that's Kunti. So that's why, you know, that's famous, you know, Queen Kunti. And then she ended up being the mother of the Pandavas. And that's how she's related to Krishna, because Kunti was Krishna's aunt. And that's why he took special care of the Pandavas also. And so that's that whole, you know, connection that's going on there. It's interesting stuff. So, yeah. They had a Swayamvara for Kunti. And all these kings came, and Pandu just rode up, you know. And rode up and went right onto the stage. And she just put the garland right around Pandu. And then all the, you know, kings, you know, they kind of got angry, you know, and Pandu just stared them down like, you know, like an angry bull, and they all just stopped. Usually there's a fight, but there wasn't a fight even. They were all scared of Pandu because he was so strong. So then, you know, Pandu had his wives, and he went out into some more conquests, and after all that, he kind of wanted to take a break. So he went up into the mountains, and, you know, while he is up there, he was hunting. So this is where we run into the famous story. There's a lot of hunting accidents. If you read some king's going somewhere and he's out hunting, and then something bad happens, or some event, you know, usually something's going on. I mean, Shantanu's going hunting, he meets Ganga, and Parikshit's out hunting, and then he, you know, runs into the sage, and then he puts the snake around his neck, and then he gets, you know, cursed, and so is something going down. King goes, they're going out hunting. So Pandu was out hunting, and he sees the two deers mating, and so he takes the opportunity, he shoots the male deer, and then, you know, the male deer turns out to be a sage, and the sage curses him. He said, you know, I don't blame you as a king, because it's your duty to hunt. So you shot me, it's okay. I took the form of a deer, you know, you didn't know any better. I'm not cursing you for that. But it's not dharmic to shoot animals that are mating. I'm cursing you because of that. He said, you know, I lived in the forest with my wife, and I didn't want to offend anybody, so we just took the form of animals. And so then he's like, the sage cursed him that if he, the next time he wants to engage in sexual intercourse with his wife, then he'll die. So then Pandu was heartbroken because he had no children. And I mean, he took his brahmacharya seriously because he didn't want to die, you know, and he was kind of stuck up there in the mountains. I mean, they heard about it, but he didn't want to leave because, you know, you're down in the city, a lot of distractions and a lot of rajaguna, you know, amongst the rajas, you know, a lot of rajaguna. And he wanted to stay up there with the sages because, you know, up there in the mountains, it's more austere environment, colder environment. The hotter it gets, the more the passions get woken up as well. And in the more cold environments, people are more austere. And it kind of, you know, draw in. You get, I mean, even if you look like culturally, you, these cold places, you know, kind of makes people draw in. And so up there in the mountains, he just wanted to stay there. And they're actually, all the places where he lived are still there. You can go, I've seen pictures, like, it's all pine forest, really. But all the places where Pandu was at this time, it's all there still, different. As you know, it's all detail. I mean, half of Mahabharata is a geographical lesson. I mean, it's all, they talk about all the rivers and all the places. It's really amazing when you think about it, how geographically aware these people were. Like, you got a whole map of the country, of the countryside, like, fully realized, you know? They're talking about all these different places. This is where he was. And it's kind of, it's for me, it, at least, it kind of shows to me some of the validity of the historical value of this document, because it's so much in depth about where everything happened and when it happened based on astrology and different things like that. It's very, you know, pukka as far as that's concerned. I mean, it's quite a cultural feat to be so geographically sound and understanding your area. I mean, you know, most of your European stuff, it's there be dragons, you know? you know, it's pretty profoundly together as far as, you know, where everything is and everything. So Pandu was up there. And it's an interesting part because all these sages were going to the higher realms. And Pandu wanted to go with them. And they said, I'm sorry, but you can't come because you have no children. And the place we're going, that's one of the requirements. All these, you know, typically we think of all these sages as like brahmacharis. But the fact is that they had their wives and families, but they just really lived austerely. Is a different, like, they're forest dwellers, but they still, you know, had their wives and children and stuff like that. It isn't like they're, like, you know, sannyasis or something like that. They're just, I mean, they did severe tapasya and stuff. And, I mean, but it's different than what some people might think, you know. At least some of them were definitely, like, sages. I mean, were, like, brahmachari, but a lot of them, they were just... So the place that they were going, he needed to have children, and I believe they're going to Brahma Loka or maybe Mahara Loka, in the upper. They're going because there's a lot of pathways up in the Himalayas that they kind of take you to like a, it's like the way it's described. I mean, the best way to describe it nowadays would be like some of these roads, they take you like in a dimensional portal. And you're like, all of a sudden, you're like in another planetary system. You know, it's all connected. Like, there's the Earth, you know, and then, you know, we get our telescope and then we, you know, look and, oh, there's the moon and there's this and that and all these things. But the way that they would travel, like, we think, oh, yeah, you know, I'll get in my spaceship and I'll fly like a billion miles to, or, you know, whatever, you know, 8 trillion, you know, light years, we'll get to another planet or something that has life in it, you know. What these people did is they would go in this place and then they get in a higher dimension. And then everything changes and the relative space changes. And then you just go to another island and then you come back here and then boom, you're on another planet. You know, that's what they would do. They'd go in these mountain paths and then they'd go somewhere and then they'd pop up in another world, you know. And so that's how they would travel. It's a lot shorter. You don't gotta jump in, you know, rocket ship and travel for, you know, 100 years or whatever it takes, you know, to get to some or 10 generations to get some other, you know, planet. That's our modern convenience travel, you know. But you know, these people just get in another dimension and pop to another location, and then bang, you know, they're there. So that's how they did it. So they were going there, but, you know, the other thing with that travel method, though, is you have to be qualified, you know. And so Pandu didn't have children, and so he's feeling bad, and he was trying to get some way to have children, and there's this whole conversation between him and Kunti and Madri, and they're trying to figure out how he can have children, and she wanted children, and there's all these different stories, and he's telling her maybe she should, finally he gets to, he's like, maybe, you know, maybe you should just, you know, I could use one of these rishis as a surrogate father. And so then she said, well, I mean, if you're going to go like that route, I have a mantra, I can summon, you know, devas. So then he's like, oh, wow, that works. So, yeah, they get the devas as surrogate father. So that's what they did, you know. So I guess we can stop here, because then I'm talking about, I don't know if that's a